Hello everyone, this is Reba Winkler at the National Quality Forum. Thank you so much for joining us today for the work group conference call for the Pulmonary and Critical Care Endorsement Maintenance Project. The asthma work group today will be discussing, doing preliminary discussions of 10 of the measures in this project. As a reminder, this is a public meeting. We do have several audience members listening, and at the end of our call, we will be giving them an opportunity to make any public comment. A transcript and recording of this call will be available in a couple of days, and they will be posted on NQF's website. That will allow anyone of interest to review the discussion. Today, our goal is for the work groups to have a preliminary discussion of 10 of the measures related to asthma. The work group has been able to focus on just 10 of the 35 measures in this project related to asthma and really take a detailed view of them against the criteria. And so I thank the folks that have submitted your ratings to us online. I believe that Katie sent out this spreadsheet with the results of the ratings, the preliminary ratings from at least four of the work group members. This will serve as a starting point for our discussion for each of the measures. What we'd like to do is really focus in on the areas where you may have questions or concerns or disagreements. If everybody's in agreement about criteria and evidence and whatever, then there isn't a great deal to talk about, and we can focus our efforts on the things where there is something to discuss. The summary of the work that you're doing today, the ratings you've submitted, and the discussion you're going to have, we will put together as a summary, and that will be form the basis of our conversation for our meeting in March of the entire steering committee. So it's important that we identify the issues and concerns for these 10 measures today so that they can be highlighted going forward. We also have the measure developers with us to respond to any questions or concerns. Perhaps some of the issues you raise may prompt them to want to respond or put additional information into the submission forms and in preparation for the in-person meeting. So essentially that's what our goal is. 10 measures is ambitious in 2 hours, so we will want to be keeping an eye on the time, and I'll try and just kind of facilitate keeping things moving along. Anybody in the work group have any questions about what we're going to be doing? Okay, then let's just start off with our agenda. Measure number 36 is the first measure we're going to talk about. This is use of appropriate medications for asthma. This is a measure that's been endorsed for several years by NQF. It comes from NCQA. We do have our developers with us. Dr. Lang, I understand you're with us?
Yes.
Oh, great. Did you want to perhaps start the discussion by just kind of reviewing, going through the criteria, starting with importance, and provide your thoughts?
Sure. There's no question that this deals with an important area, and I think that's true across the board with regards to the measures that we're discussing, in that asthma is prevalent and that there continues to be, there's a high prevalence of asthma that's not well controlled. There's unacceptable morbidity and mortality. We all know that asthma is a treatable condition, and that a lot of this morbidity and mortality is preventable, and that a gap continues to exist between optimal care as defined in evidence-based guidelines and normative care as it's actually occurring in the community. In that regard, there are a number of measures, and I know that we may be discussing this from the context of harmonizing these and discussing the differences in age, for instance, that are specified by these different measures. But let me focus then on number 36. I don't know, how would you like me to proceed in terms of the best utilization of time, given that I'm the leadoff hitter here, in terms of, I assume that all of you have read and are familiar with the metric or the measure. Is that correct?
The folks joining us have all reviewed the measures.
Okay, so I don't need to review. I can just jump in. So the importance is high.
If you look at the ratings by the four who submitted, everyone would pretty much agree with that. The impact is high. Mm-hmm. The opportunity for improvement is rated high. And in general, pretty much high for evidence as well.
Yes, the only issue, and maybe given the other individuals on the call, perhaps you can help me with this or enlighten me. The numerator stipulates that the numerator will be comprised of members, I'm reading, who are dispensed at least one prescription for a preferred therapy during the measurement year, and the preferred therapy medications table ASM-D include not only inhaled corticosteroid and combination agents, but also omalizumab, leukotriene modifiers, theophylline, chromones, and I guess the reason that I graded the quality as moderate rather than high is that there's not as much evidence to support favorable outcomes in terms of reduction, morbidity, and mortality with these other agents as there are with inhaled corticosteroids. Now, is that an appropriate interpretation?
Hi, this is Mo from NCQA. We do realize that there's sort of different reported effectiveness with these different medications, and that ICSs tend to be the most preferred, but we were trying to be as inclusive as possible when designing this measure. So we just wanted to make sure that the medications that we put in it were sort of aligned with what is recommended in clinical practice guidelines. So we do realize that there's a difference depending on the type of medication.
Okay, that there's a difference in the level of evidence.
Right.
This is Haley Burgess. I scored it as a moderate as well in the way of quality for the same reasons, just because they received one of the medications. Again, it's just a little uncomfortable saying that, you know, what would you do with that information if they did receive one of these medications within the prescribed period? What is that telling us if it was an optimal therapy?
Right, yeah.
And I would agree. This is Trudy Hecker. Unfortunately, I couldn't log into the system. It wouldn't let me in, but I scored that as a moderate as well.
Great, thank you. Good to hear from you.
I don't think it means it's a bad measure. I think it's just something we need to be aware of. And perhaps you can shed any of the learnings, because this has been a, you know, previously endorsed measure. You know, are there learnings? Has the data that you've received provoked action? You know, because I guess what we struggle with is the number of measures. And, you know, we really want to narrow in to what are the measures that are going to be the highest impact for us. Why are we going to change care based on what we're receiving, not just to collect more information? And so I like some of the other measures that are coming a little later that are more the composite measures and give us a little more information about the adherence versus, you know, one prescription was, you know, retrieved during that time. I just feel like it would help to know a little more about the patient to change care.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is Ben from NCQA. I'm sorry, I'm at the airport, so I'm going to try and keep my comments brief. You know, as mentioned, this measure's been around since about 2005, and it was initially designed to address a gap in care, which was ensuring that people with moderate to severe persistent asthma were receiving medications, to help them manage that measure. It's been around for a long time. We've had an absence of better measures. We think that there are, you know, new ones we've just developed, which we'll be discussing next. You know, the measure is in widespread use right now, so while there is little variation, it is still ensuring that people with moderate severe asthma are, you know, being addressed. And so we have chosen not to retire yet because it's in such broad use, but we are looking at you know, the next generation of measures that will address, you know, improved outcomes in that population now in a little better way. Now that the data is better and more accurate for managing this population.
Yeah, that helps me at least to think about this. And Reva, I guess I would just ask you, as we are looking at some new generation measures, is it the goal of the committee just to go individually by measure and say, you know, yes, we would continue to endorse this measure, or would we want to start consolidating the measures as to this is the direction that we're moving versus having 10 measures, or, you know, not all of these are outpatient, but, you know, an X number of measures that we would prefer to be the ones that are followed moving forward versus what, you know, based on where we've gone with new data and advancements, et cetera. So just a question of the committee's, you know, because I approved this measure. I mean, I don't, you know, it is in practice today, and, you know, we're not going to turn the Titanic tomorrow. So they'll continue to collect the measure, but as the goal of the committee, should we be looking at it one by one or thinking about, you know, other recommendations of where we're going?
Yeah. Well, the answer to both of your questions is yes. What we like to do is, particularly since this is a previously endorsed measure and it's under maintenance review, is we do want to look at each of the measures independently and individually. However, you will then be asked before final recommendations if, given the group of measures, is there a subset that is preferred and perhaps we don't need all 10 of them or whatever subset you decide. So we will be asking those questions. We're just going to do it in order. We're going to look at it individually, and then the second pass will be to ask that very question, is do we need all of these?
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Okay. So if we've talked about importance and everybody feels comfortable that it meets the criteria for importance. How about reliability and validity? Dr. Lang, your thoughts?
Right. The major issue and the reason that there's a moderate here for me is that in the denominator details, I mean, the measure stipulates that we're focusing on moderate to severe asthmatics, and there is an issue of control versus severity, which, as we all know, are not the same thing. And you can have a patient with mild persistent asthma that's poorly controlled in the emergency department or who has frequent clinic visits, and those patients may be included in this measure. So I guess in terms of my understanding of reliability and validity and the measure properties, that I just, you know, wanted to point that out a potential source of lack of precision for the measure.
Awesome.
Right,
anybody
and so this is
Ben, go ahead.
Okay, so yeah, we recognize a slight lack of precision. I mean, we've tested this measure denominator identification algorithm multiple times, you know, with the recognition that it's basically an admin-only based identification. And repeated testing has come back that this is the most reliable way to identify that particular population. You know, there are a few inherent weaknesses that we hope to address in the future, but at the current time, it was the best of the best as far as, you know, pure admin claims identification of people with moderate severe asthma.
Okay, fair enough. Are there any other comments regarding reliability and validity?
And how about usability or feasibility? Seems to be rated pretty high.
Yeah, I think that's rated high across the board. And again, I think conclude, you know, my major concern is the inclusion of alternative controllers, which we've discussed, because as the evidence for those, you know, you can have a patient with moderate to severe persistent asthma who fulfills criteria here for this metric based on getting a prescription for an anti-leukotriene or, you know, et cetera, for which the information is not as clear.
Right.
So with those two caveats, does anybody in the work group think that presents a fatal flaw to the measure?
No.
Yeah. It's not a fatal flaw, but, you know, it's a ding.
Okay. Weakness. All right. We'll be sure and highlight those because everybody felt pretty good about the otherwise the measure meeting the criteria. Okay. If so, we can move along to measure 1799. Now, this is a new measure. I think this is what Ben Hamlin was referring to. NCQA has some new generations of measures coming along. And Haley, I believe this one was yours?
Yes, it is. And this is a new measure, so I'm glad that the NCQA group is on. So you all can help us with some of the questions. It looks like you all have reviewed these as well as I have, and our comments are there. So the member ages are similar to what's been previously endorsed, the 5 through 64 years of age. What makes this one different it would be those patients who are identified, and back to the previous statement about the identification, it is the same as what we just went through in 36, so we can talk about that. This is looking specifically at those patients who were dispensed appropriate medications, and we can come back to that statement, that remained on during the treatment period, and then it's 50% and 75%. I love the spirit of this measure, so we're getting more to an adherence of, appropriate utilization of medications versus just having one. At least we're looking at a period of time that patients would remain on their medications, and then the PDC, as you can see, proportion of days covered by at least one asthma controller medication prescription in the measurement year. So I guess if we go through the same way of looking at, impact, I felt like it was a high impact. I think the group did also. Let me scroll down in my worksheet, and I'll see where the other folks landed.
I would agree as well.
Yep.
Yeah, I do. I like the spirit of these new measures a great deal. Let's see. Okay. So, and please jump in if anyone has any other thoughts. So moving through, I guess my greatest concerns about this is actually the capturing of the information. I feel like, reliability, if we're using claims information, we're identifying the patients the same way as we have before through this NCQA measure. That part doesn't change. Collecting the information from claims database would be very similar. I guess just maybe a little of information from our contacts around the reliability of collecting that information and the algorithm of the calculation, if you will, for the 50 and 75%. Ben, would you want to speak to that?
Sure. So a little historical perspective here. When we developed 1799 and 1800, one of the things we tried to do was build them off of the current algorithm for admin claims. So you'll notice the denominator is almost identical for all three of these measures. It's sort of the exclusions and all so on and so forth. We didn't try and reinvent the wheel if we didn't have to, given that these were. And we also then, when we tested these two new measures, we retested a lot of those algorithms, like I just mentioned earlier, that sort of ensuring that they are still sort of the best way to capture those populations. With the new measure, MMA, the appropriate medication management, really the focus of our field test for this measure in particular was the access to pharmacy data and the reliability of the pharmacy data. And then sort of what we did is actually took member-level files from 9 health plans and did a series of calculations ourselves looking at the percent of missing data, which was actually surprisingly very low. And so what I alluded to earlier, when we had to wait for that next generation of measures, it was almost 7 or 8 years, was the data wasn't ready in 2005, but now through our field test and through our analysis, which is going to occur in a couple of months here, we feel that the data is there, it is reliable, and there's very little missing data in the pharmacy right now for most of the members that we tested. So we're very comfortable with this measure as far as the ability of health plans and organizations with the appropriate access to administrative claims to have this data and to be able to calculate this measure. The 50 and 75% were a consensus-based thresholds that were set through our expert work group, understanding that different populations may have, now there's some new papers out now saying the pediatric population maybe an every other day for ICS is more appropriate. So therefore that day, the 50% would be a great rate for the 5 to 11 or the 5 to 17 population. The 75% would, perhaps look at those plans that were excelling in this arena and having very good medication adherence and compliance. And so they wanted to propose those two, as you sort of said, as a starting point to look and see where plans and groups fell out. and how they did. And our testing data, again, I think as we included in the table, showed that there is definitely some variation between the plans. There's some room for improvement, but also the numbers were kind of along the lines of what we expected.
Okay, that's helpful. And I see where you have the ages stratified out in stratification details and variables. So what you just said from, you know, the 5 to 11-year-old, would you maybe not consider the 75% if 50% compliance is, you know, probably a really good marker? Because the marketplace may feel like they've not hit the mark if it's not 75%, if there's not a way to, you know, have that caveat really elaborated upon or clarified.
Sure. So these are all actually reported separately. So each age strata is reported separately and along with the total rate for all these measures. So, you know, again, we could say that the benchmark for most plans in the pediatric population would be that 50% threshold. The 75% threshold either says the plan is doing very well with their medication compliance, or perhaps in the pediatric population that they may have a more chronically, a much more severe population. If these measures are not risk-adjusted or severity-adjusted at the moment. So that's sort of the balance of a high-performing plan versus identifying an at-risk population, opportunity for improvement, perhaps balancing the rates. But again, we're going to look at these two thresholds for the next few years of reporting and sort of see how the plans are falling out, what the variation is, what the feedback is from the reporting process, and then, you know, make additional determinations whether we need to either eliminate that one for the pediatric population or maybe set a different threshold, and so on and so forth. But, we sort of do an ongoing assessment in new measures year by year to determine, you know, if we're still on the mark.
I think that's really reassuring. This is Trudy, because I feel like that we serve an inner-city population with huge disparities here. So the fact that you're taking into consideration the higher-risk urban indigent families that we see is very important to me. I was kind of concerned about that.
And we may see, you know, perhaps in the commercial population, a different rate in the 75% than in the Medicaid population. So perhaps in the Medicaid population, we would expect to see, you know, a higher rate.
I
think we lost. Dan, we're not able to hear you if you can hear us. Okay.
Yes, I can. I'm sorry. Like I said, I'm in a very noisy place. I'm trying to speak into the mic here.
So other questions from the group. I did, when I was going through this, approve this measure, you know, based on this discussion today of understanding a little more of how we'll learn over the next couple years and make this very usable, but actually more accurate. And I think Ben was able to describe how they would be doing that over time.
Maybe this is Kevin. Maybe I should join in because I was the one who on the survey said no because of concern. So it would be helpful to better understand this construction of this new concept. But first, I have to say, I'm really intrigued. I really think that this was a really great attempt at trying to break through the current measures into a more graded measure of the quality of treatment. Recognizing the limitations that are in terms of using a pharmacy data here. And you've got a great group on the respiratory map here who are thinking, who are great thinkers on this stuff. But if you could help me explain, if I understand this right, there's this thing called an earliest dispensing event, which you call an IPSD, and that can happen anywhere in the measurement period, in the first month or the last month, you can get it to an ISPD. And then you look at how many days that are covered by that period and then look and see how much controller therapy is being administered and then create a simple proportion. Is that essentially what's going on here?
Yes, that's correct.
So a person could get to 50% if they were doing just the minimum of the 3 months and 2 prescriptions, or they were doing 6 months on 12 months, which would mean that half the year that they're missing in one case and 1 month they're missing in the next case, which is a huge difference in terms of quality of care for a patient like this, even at the 50% mark, because of the nature of how the measure was specified, that it could be anywhere from 12 months of observation based upon an IPSD of 12 months allowing for 12 months versus a two-month IPSD, which really would just be whether on 2 months they were getting controller therapy. So no minimum was set or anything like that.
It wasn't, but one of the things we did ensure that we tested was when those IPSDs were actually occurring during the measurement year. I'm trying to pull up the table right now. We did find that the majority of them were actually in the first quarter of the year, so most of the patients who were meeting the denominator specification were actually being evaluated against at least 9 months, but probably more than 9 months, because most prescriptions were being dispensed in either January or February. And I'm just, like I said, I'm just trying to pull that table up to tell you exactly what percentage that was, but we did look at that to ensure that, you know, that was a
Ben, I think it's on page 15.
Yeah, my computer's running slow. It's just taking time to open up the file.
Here.
Yeah, you do. It is page 15.
Yeah, so if everyone can look at table 6 on page 15, it's... Oh, okay. I see that it's on the WebEx.
Table 6. You've got it on the WebEx now?
Yeah, so as Ben was saying, you can see for both the commercial and Medicaid product lines and for all the age bands, most of the events occurred in quarter one based on the field test data.
Yeah, so I guess the question would be is are those patients, I mean, knowing the seasonality of asthma, are the patients who have that happen, do they have a different kind of asthma
right.
process going on? And are we getting, you know, a seasonal asthma that probably only needs a few months of therapy? We don't know the duration of therapy for those people in terms of their needs. I mean, there's a whole series of just underlying questions here about whether we're going to falsely be saying people are getting good care if they're above the 50 or if they're below the 50. And
do remember, though, that these are the people who already meet the two-year persistent asthma definition. So,
well, correct. But persistent asthma can look different within populations, even in terms of how it's expressed. So has there been any work to try and understand the validity of this measure in terms of how it's used for people who only have short short measurement periods based upon how their IPSD comes versus those who have longer, to actually do some audit or some random sampling to see that it's actually measuring good quality, so to speak, as maybe by expert opinion or something else that would look like good outcomes?
No, we didn't do any kind of correlations between when the duration of measurement and their sort of where they fell with, you know, with regard to either 50 or 75%. That is something we could probably look at in the, you know, again, in the data set that we have. But that was not something we did because, again, we were, you know, we reassessed the two-year denominator and found that to be, you know, adequately identifying the majority of the people with persistent asthma. And so we were mostly focused on, you know, the length of time they were being assessed for their PDC versus
In my mind, then, and I'll stop here. The reason why I'm a little hesitant on this measure, as per se as it is, it feels under-tested for the fact of are we going to identify a misclassification bias that is going to wrongly direct people into thinking that they are not people, but systems, to thinking that they're doing well or not by a measure that we don't know, in fact, how well it's correlating that measure to actual good quality, and so we just don't have enough information. I would put it as incomplete in terms of the validity piece. I definitely would feel very uncomfortable about 75% having more meaning than the 50% until we have a better understanding of that. And if this measure were to go forward, which it feels to me a little bit premature and worth some more testing, at least we probably would want to be very concerned about offering up two measures when, in fact, we don't even know that the first measure is doing what it needs to do.
Yeah, I would add there still is the same issue with the numerator and the medications that are the definition of controller therapy. That there are non-inhaled corticosteroid agents that would allow a particular case or patient to be categorized as fulfilling the inclusion in the numerator. Where,
yeah, I mean, this is something that continually comes up with our medication tables, and it really was, we've tried to keep it in an ICS-only rate, but unfortunately the pushback has been that, you know, there's such a broad range of practices in regard to management of persistent asthma. You know, even though the percentage of people who are getting the alternative medications other than ICS is lower, It's still there's still a, you know, a significant enough proportion that we feel it's still necessary to include them in the for measurement. But we do see some trouble with small denominators in the persistent asthma population, even in the health plan level. So
yeah, I mean,
we want to
capture
as broad a population as possible.
Yeah, one issue you're going to, I mean, all these things you're going to get into, especially when you're looking at adults and pediatrics, is there is a tendency to use less inhaled corticosteroids in the pediatric population, probably more single air, or maybe more of a tendency to use inhaled corticosteroids in the adult population and maybe perhaps less single air. So, I mean, it just seems to keep on coming up with controller medications. Yeah. But
some of these metrics stipulate moderate to severe persistent asthma, for which, you know, onotherapy with an antileukotriene. You know,
I understand, but there's a hesitancy. I mean, in real life.
No, I understand.
In the real world, yeah. So.
Understand. Same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you design the measure, I think, you know, I mean, that's probably a longer conversation. but we should probably have a conversation and develop a consensus regarding this definition.
May I ask Reva a question about. If the measure feels like it's good enough for sort of quality improvement work, but it doesn't yet have enough, it's incomplete in terms of our understanding of issues such as misclassification bias that may be occurring, is it possible to endorse a measure just for quality and not for public accountability?
Not at this point in time. NQF's focus is really around uses for accountability. So we are looking for measures that are good enough for that use. So, and that's been a pretty clear-cut distinction at NQF pretty much from the beginning. You're looking at the criteria for these measures being used for some accountability function.
And, I mean, this measure suffers from the same misclassification bias as ASM does as well, in the sense of, you know, we have a two-year administrative claims denominator that gets the population down as sensitive as possible. But until more sensitive coding practices come around, that's some of the best of the best we can do right at the current time, which is one of the reasons why we built that measure using the similar concept.
Well, I think, Ben, that it's a great basis to build, the foundation to build additional measures. I think David's concern, which gets washed out a little bit when you're not getting into trying to define the quality of management as opposed to just whether there is a controller. Now we're trying to figure out what proportion of that time is on a controller. So David's concern of the denominator gets kind of ramped up a bit here, as I see it. I don't know, David, is that what you're saying a bit?
Yeah.
So it just, it's at least as I'm hearing it, it feels like it's on the right track. It feels like a good measurement process, but it because of this lack of really sort of getting underneath it a little bit and seeing what this new concept of a start date with variable measurement period for different persons with asthma might do in the context of this measurement scheme in terms of misclassification of good or bad control is a little bit of a guess, and putting it out there for public accountability a little bit risky because you may have a lot of misclassification going on there, and so group practices may be trying to fight over differences that aren't real in terms of whether they're going to get paid or not. So that's the kind of way that we have to sort of think about it. I would definitely shy away from the 75th percentile in my mind for certain, and I'm personally would feel a little more comfortable deferring this one until it gets a little more data.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. This is Trudy. It's a little too unclear, I think, and the vagaries of that seasonality really does bother me as well.
Okay. What we'll do, because there does seem to be somewhat differences of opinion and maybe need to think about it a little bit more, is at the steering committee meeting, Haley, you can present to the entire committee the concerns, the issues, and then actually the entire committee will be voting on the ratings, and how that vote comes out will determine the final recommendation of the entire committee.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Perhaps we need, in the interest of time, can we go on to measure 1800, which is, again, another new measure from NCQA. And Dr. Guam with us? No, he submitted his ratings. But this is, again, I think in a similar vein, percentage of members age 5 to 64 who were identified as having persistent asthma and had a ratio of controller medications to total asthma medications of 0.5 or greater during the measurement year. Since Dr. Glum isn't with us, perhaps Ruben, Kevin, or Haley, would you like to give us your thoughts? You did submit your pretty.
Well, since it's kind of silent here, I'll jump in. The ratio measures in asthma are a little vexing. Because of the issue of you can have a higher or lower ratio because of the numerator or denominator shifting a bit. There is the good work by Fulbergy et al. I only say that tongue-in-cheek because I was a co-author when I said good work. But it was a piece looking at this ratio question and looked at a couple of different measures. The ratio works better when you have more exposure time to the medication, and it works differently in terms of it relates to outcomes, at least by emergency room use, whether or not you're getting a lot of months of medicine versus a few months. And so I would think that it would be important to look at that question, and particularly I think since Anne's on the respiratory map, as well as a couple of work on that paper, to ask the question between now and March, you know, is there a threshold of months of reliever medicine below which you would not want to see this, and maybe that would be an exclusion or a denominator issue, and then the ratio may be more stable for this kind of question. But that would be my thoughts here.
Thoughts from anybody else?
I think you're right on target. I would agree.
Agree. Definitely concerns about the ratio.
Yeah.
Our folks from NCQA, Kevin, a bit of a question. Was that information you could perhaps provide before the in-person meeting or by the in-person meeting? Is Ben still with us? If you're there, we're not hearing you. Don, did you hear the question?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, okay. Good.
Okay, when is the in-person meeting?
March 21st, 22nd.
Okay, I mean, we can go back and take a look in our research data set that we have. I'm hoping that, I can't promise anything, but we'll certainly give it a try.
Okay. I think that would be particularly helpful for the committee for the... any additional thoughts or concerns on measure 1800? Okay. I think the four folks who've submitted their ratings have outlined some good issues. And I know, Trudy, you said you hadn't been able to get in the system, but if you...
No, uh-uh. But
if you add yours in, we'll have that for the summary.
Yes, I'll definitely...
I think that would be very helpful for everybody when we go to the in-person meeting.
Yeah, I voted no as well. I mean, I...
Okay. All right. But perhaps NCQA can provide us with some information to address Kevin's concern. All right, so I think those are...
And just in reading one of your comments here, this is only prescriptions dispensed. It's not actually written. So I don't know if that helps people clarify the number of medications here. I noticed one of the comments was worried about that prescriptions may or may not be filled, whether they're written or not.
All right. In the interest of time, perhaps we can move on to... Measure 47, and this is a measure from Physicians Consortium for Performance Improvement, Asthma Pharmacologic Therapy for Persistent Asthma. Dr. Lang, I think this was yours again?
Right. This measure, well, first of all, the importance is high, but in contrast to some of the other measures we've been discussing, such as the measure we first began with, number 36, the age range here is different. It's 5 to 50 as opposed to 5 to 64. The concern regarding the inclusion of alternative, that is non-inhaled corticosteroid agents, in the numerator exists with this measure as well. And is there any other comments from any of the members regarding anything I've said so far?
Dr. Lang, just one question. Given we've got two age ranges for basically very similar concepts, what does the evidence show the age range should be?
Well, other people can feel free to jump in. I think that there's at least I read somewhere that there was a desire to be as broad or inclusive as we can in terms of the population for whom the measure is targeted. The higher you extend that upper limit of the age range, the more diagnostic confusion there is with patients who may have COPD. So the less precise the measure will be, and I think it's a balance between the trade-off of that you know, a few points lower in terms of precision, but yet the on the other side, measure reaches a broader population.
Reva, this is Mark Antman at the AMA. May I comment on the age range?
Sure. Go ahead.
So, thank you. So, NCQA kindly shared with AMA PCPI last year their testing data where they field tested the extended age range that is going up to age 64. And we shared that with some members of our development group. And our preliminary intent is to revise the age range of our measure, of measure 47, to match the age range of NCQA's. Unfortunately, we've been a little bit delayed in confirming that approval and the approval of the PCPI simply because we have a number of other asthma measures that go along with this one, and we had some delays in finalizing those and didn't want to go back to the PCPI piecemeal. But we hope to be able to do so very shortly, and we expect that there will be approval of that extended age range and will therefore match the NCQA measure 36.
Great. Thanks, Mark. So does that I think that helps a little bit on harmonization. I'm just going to add one additional comment that we've received is it's been noticed that there are no asthma measures for the Medicare population. And any thoughts from the committee?
Well, I think that what has been the kind of the bugaboo is this diagnostic issue of misclassification with a mixed model of asthma COPD, or is it a misdiagnosis of asthma for COPD? And so that's what's held the upper boundary of the ages, mm-hmm. which David talked about. Beyond that, you know, at some point in time, there's no reason why one couldn't begin to test these measures in an older population and see if they make sense. But I'd be curious what other members of the work group think on that.
Yeah, the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you get some kind of history of smoking, and you could say history of smoking for greater than 10 years, you eliminate, that would be more COPD than asthma. But you're getting it into the COPD issues. Yeah, that's the real problem, yeah.
Well, we at least
right. The other issue here is that the measure pertains to individuals with a diagnosis of persistent asthma, as opposed to moderate to severe persistent asthma. So, you know, the challenge here is to correctly identify individuals who have persistent asthma, so that you're eliminating in your description. Patients who have intermittent asthma. So I think that's, you know, I think the question I had as I read through this is, you know, can you, you know, there is a tendency to sometimes over-treat patients with intermittent asthma, and, you know, based on the what they stipulate here, such patients would be included in this definition when they don't really have persistent asthma.
Right. I think that's a really valid point.
One quick question to Mark. This is Kevin, Mark. How is persistent asthma defined? I was having a hard time in trying to quickly ferret it out in your document. And again, I'm supportive of this measure, but this is just a question for information.
Right. Kevin, are you asking how the guideline distinguishes intermittent from persistent, or how we filter out those patients from the denominator of this measure?
The latter, not the former.
Okay. So this measure relies upon, this is a clinician-level measure, and so the intent is for physicians to make the determination that patients have persistent asthma, and so we're asking that they affirmatively classify patients as having persistent asthma and not intermittent asthma. Now, what's not said in the measure is that we are counting on physicians to evaluate patient symptoms and follow the algorithm provided in the current guideline for assessing whether or not, in fact, their asthma is persistent versus intermittent. But beyond that, we defer to the clinician to make that distinction and categorize the patient appropriately.
This is Haley. I just have a question, and it's, I guess, kind of along the lines of 36 of the usefulness of measures that are saying that the patient has had one prescription in a 12-month period. And if this measure has been in place, and it has since 2009, at least endorsed through NQF, I'm just speaking more practically, what has changed in the outpatient care arena based on these measures, right? So I want to be very practical about any measures that we would be using. Does the data that come back, is it showing us that we have greater gaps and then, you know, physician practices are closing those gaps? Because honestly, I like the adherence measures a little better than just, and I know there's issues with that certainly, though many adherence measures have been approved through NQF before in different disease states. But I guess I just have a question of practicality. If it's just saying that, okay, we've identified persistent asthma patients that have had at least one prescription filled, is that still getting to the point of, are we providing good care? And maybe it's a philosophical question, but, you know, and I know that we are evolving measures over time, but are these the type of measures that are really causing us to do something different in the practice setting?
Mark, what is your knowledge of the use of this measure? Where is it being used and how is it being used?
Reva, you're referring to measure 47?
Correct.
Yes, this has been in the CMS PQRS program, I believe, since the beginning of that program, which would be 2007 or perhaps 2008. So it's been widely used in PQRS.
Do we have any idea what the data has shown over years since that?
As to the rate of the, as to the...
like improvement over time, perhaps.
If that was not included in our testing data, we can certainly access that data and provide that, Reva.
Yeah, I'm looking quickly, Mark. If it's in here, I'm just
and
not
maybe
being
I
able
missed
to spot
it,
it
too,
so.
But I don't, I guess I just have a real problem with data for the sake of data. Like, is it information that's going to move us to change, and what are we doing with the information that we're receiving?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I sit on the ACCP QI committee. This is Ruben Cohen, and you got our comments, and I think in our committee, the majority of members had exactly what you're saying. The data is good. I realize there's a problem. There's a lot of good data, but do our practitioners use these in their offices, and is that really changing the practice of care. And I think there was an Excel sheet with the ACCP comment, and I think a lot of these measures had more or less the same comments. It's a general question. I'm not picking on any topic. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's kind of philosophical, but I think it's, you know, that's what they're calling us to ask the question of, you know, with the usability, et cetera, you know, those
right.
kind of questions are really getting to that. Are we using these in the right way, and is it the right measure to use in this way? And now that we've had some experience, it would be great, you know, to hear from those owners of these measures of, you know, what has the trend been over time? If we've been reporting this back, has it caused us to move in a certain direction? Have we changed? Are we doing better? Because
right,
if
exactly.
the measure is not moving us or having us do anything better in a practical sense with our patients, is it one that should move forward? And I'm not picking on this measure. I mean, this would be for any of them. But that's why I really like the spirit of these newer measures, because at least it's getting to more of a adherence, you know, across a continuum. And maybe we don't know exactly what that is for asthma yet, with all the things that we've identified as questions. But I think this is just something to consider. And perhaps if the measure owners could come in March, just to talk to that a little bit, that would help us understand, are these really the right measures to begin with that we should continue endorsing?
This is Mark again at the AMA. This is very helpful feedback, and we can certainly come to the March meeting with as much information as we can on the degree of improvement that we've seen with the use of Measure 47, and we'll be interested in further discussion.
Thank you. Really appreciate that.
Thank you.
This is Ben. We can do the same thing. I mean, one of the reasons that stimulated our development of the new measures was the fact that we've seen our 36 improve up to a point where it's now, you know, performing in the high 90s. So we do see that it was useful at the time, but we're not seeing much variation now. So we're not really, you know, it's kind of like, well, what is the next phase to get to that, you know, the next level of assessment? So.
Right. Okay. I think we need to move on. And I think we're going to go to measures 143, 144, and 338. These are three measures from the Joint Commission. These are for patients age 2 through 17 for inpatient asthma. And 143, I think, Trudy, I think that's yours, relievers for inpatient asthma?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's kind of the kind of thing that we all – you can just down, make sure I can see what everybody else said, so thank you. Fairly a high impact. Asthma is the number one diagnosis for children admitted to the hospital. It's the number one chronic disease. So clearly the use of a reliever in the inpatient setting is kind of, for many of us, kind of a no-brainer. So I think it's a high impact, high reliability. You know, the relievers are this mainstay of what we do in addition to the inhaled systemic corticosteroids. So, you know, I think we all agree that it's a yes. You know, it's become a gimme in our organization. So just to be honest with you, where do we take the next step? But I think most of us who practice within pediatric settings see that this is at 100%. It becomes part of a pathway in the electronic health record. So, again, it is part of the Joint Commission. It's a requirement. I don't see a lot of controversy around it. So I would open it up to my colleagues. I agree with everyone across the board here and all the studies, and clearly it's been the mainstay of what we've done for years in pediatric asthma management.
Kevin here, I think the one person who kind of was concerned, because this has succeeded so well that it's at 99 point some percent.
Exactly.
And,
for all of us, we're almost at 100%, exactly.
So I don't know what it's doing for gap anymore, and without a gap, I mean, it does come a time of retiring a measure.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what I was just going to say. I think we're in the same boat for both that and systemic corticosteroids.
Exactly. Those are the two. And the downside, though, is if you do those two, then you're left with just the
home management plan, which is a whole other kettle of fish.
Exactly. But the question to Reva, I guess, is when you get to a measure that's at 99.5%, success in other areas, how
right.
does NCF sort of view that issue?
Well, indeed,
I'm
your questions are exactly
yeah.
the ones that are put forward, and the reason that we have criteria 1B, opportunity for improvement, And when it, you know, the underlying premise of the measures NQF is looking to endorse are that they are actionable and can drive quality improvement. And if already, if you're pretty much topped out, there's very little movement to be had. And so perhaps we need to look to other measures to be endorsed. We do have a situation where we've had measures that have been in use for a long time, publicly reported. In our recent cardiovascular project, a lot of the measures on hospital compare being used for AMIs are at this topped-out range. People were reluctant to remove endorsement because they were concerned that they were definitely good measures, met all the other criteria except for the lack of gap. And what has been done is that the board has approved a special status for these measures called a reserve status. And they otherwise meet all criteria with the exception of the gap. And the idea is they're kind of on the shelf because you're not going to have a lot of utility in them in driving additional improvement, but they're still good measures. Where that's going to go in the long term remains to be seen. It's only been something that's been developed in the last year.
Well, if it's possible, can we propose these as reserve measures, these two, this and systemic steroids for inpatient? Because they really have topped out.
And I agree. And
yeah,
I mean, there's part of the Joint Commission measure. So all organizations are going to be monitoring this. I mean, it's a kind of a safety net for this measure.
Mm-hmm.
So I would agree. You know, putting this into reserve status, this is implicit in everything we do for an patient that's admitted for asthma.
And
I mean,
everybody's comfortable that the reliability and validity of the measures are good, the usability is good, the feasibility is good, it's been used. It's just the fact that it was highly successful.
Right.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, this is Brendel Glome. I apologize. I came on Central Time, so I've obviously come in very late. Are we on 18? Are we on 1800?
No, we're on 143 and 144.
Okay.
Sort of put them together because they're pretty straightforward. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I apologize.
There's a way to put these into reserve status. I think that's crucial. I mean, as most hospitals go to electronic health records with the federal government, this is a pathway that's built into everybody's order set. I don't see it changing. I think the compliance will be very high. So.
Okay.
And the evidence is clear. So. And the nuances are, do you do continuous? Do you do ipratropium, ipratropium? You know, those are different questions, but the use of a reliever and a systemic steroid is not in question at all.
Okay. The only other question I would ask is, for this, the lower age range is 2 years.
Right.
And where the other measures we saw were 5 years. Would somebody like to comment on the lower end age?
Well, so for under two, we have the whole issue of how do you define asthma?
Right.
How many attacks do you have? It's a very big moving target because of the bronchiolitis issue. So I, as a pediatrician, I have no trouble with over two. That was a question I did have, is how do we pick five for the other measures? And I would ask colleagues to chime in on that one. This is my first time on this call, so I apologize.
No problem.
Well, I'm a pediatric pulmonologist, and I, to back you up, I mean, as you say, it is difficult making the quote-unquote asthma diagnosis in that age range, but it does occur. They are there. My hesitation is always with kind of the definition that we've set up is the number of prior diagnoses or the number of prior visits with that as a diagnosis, because the pendulum has kind of swung the other way now, and I think we the pulmonologists do think that it's being a bit overdiagnosed now, so that you know, one doctor visit with an asthma diagnosis does not asthma make. And I do think we need to consider, do we need a higher threshold to call asthma, not just in the very young, but in the pediatric population. I would say that's worthy of discussion.
Well, it was just something I wanted to raise as a harmonization issue, because the varying age ranges does tend to drive people crazy.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think the pulmonologist is absolutely correct. We're we've sort of, as we've gotten a little bit more, again, when you use the single use of Flovent, that sort of drives, that's why I think those measures were concerning, drives the thought that these are persistent asthmatics. Again, I'm not sure that that necessarily correlates either. And I
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's where the nervousness comes from, the 1799 and 1800. Yet at the same time, you know, we do see kids, you know, I think two feels to me very safe and clear at this point, although not to say that in 2 years or 5 years from now that'll change. I guess the thing is, what's the difference between the 2-year-old and then the 5-year-old and the other measures? Is that just a